Feet is recorded upon. Sorry, just to repeat that, I got. I was just saying the other members not able to make the meeting this morning. Record their apologies. By way of introduction, this is on page 3 of the presentation. Ideally, if you can skip forward to page 3, please. Big one. Let's go back to page 2. We'll just have a quick look at the agenda, which is the introduction. Look at the committee governance, and then our activities, three key ones: external audit, internal audit, risk management, and then fourthly, obviously assessing the capabilities and resources within the financial function, financial office.
That's right, Chair. That's right, Chair. Can we hold it there? The main thrust of having you first in the meeting in absence of the AG and her team is to, in the first instance, check with you whether there are any things that you'd want to inform the committee in their absence. Those matters which are worrisome, if there are no such, we can invite them to be part of the meeting from the onset, because the key for us is to ensure that you make the team accountable if there are matters which you feel that are pertinent for you to deal with, and you'll be worried to raise them in their own presence. I think even from the committee itself, if there are any areas that the committee seek to clarify with yourself, they're free to do so. And then thereafter, we get into your presentation.
Thank you, Chair.
Are there any of such areas?
Yes. No, we have a very open and transparent relationship with the various players involved in the external, internal audit and risk management within the Auditor General South Africa. As I will point out later, we do meet with the external auditors without management present, and similarly with internal auditors without management present. That's in case they wish to inform us of any issues that they may have. It's also a requirement of the King Code of Corporate Governance. So it's a standard thing that any would mention, but we have nothing of what we're going to present today is, let me put it differently, everything that we're presenting today is known to the DAG and his team. I mentioned the DAG because he is, of course, the accounting officer.
Yes.
But the AG, I imagine, would have had access to our presentation. But there's nothing in here that we would need to respond, would prefer to have it in camera without them present.
No, great. Thank you very much. So, Paul, you are free to bring them in. But so far, I think the chair should continue making the presentation. You are here with us for a period of an hour, so that you must take that in consideration.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This year was a year of immense change. It's almost become cliche now. One can't do a presentation without referring to COVID-19 pandemic, and obviously we highlight that, and we'll discuss that in a bit of detail further on. But clearly, it was all about mitigating risks in a COVID environment, striving to maintain the continuity of operations. It was also an incredibly sad year, Chairman. I think everybody in on this meeting knew the late AG, Mr. Kenny Mkhwetu. I personally have known him since back in the 90s. And he was a truly wonderful man. And it was just such horrible news to hear that he'd he'd passed on during the last month of his last month of his 7-year term as Auditor General. But we'll remember him, as is set out in the slide, for his resolve, his vision, and contribution to the legacy of AGSA, which is, of course, the Supreme Audit Institution in South Africa. I've just seen on the screen, Chair, if I may, that Adil Kamadin, who's the AGSA Corporate Secretariat, business leader head, I'm not sure that he just put up a chat that he's not in the meeting. If whoever's admitting people can try and check that he can be admitted. Following the sad news about late advocate Mkhwetu, on a joyous note, it was really uplifting that the former DAG, Ms. Tsakani Maluleke, has been appointed as the first female AG in the history of South Africa. And we wish her much success in her role. And obviously the Audit Committee will do everything in its power to support her during her journey. She really stood out as a remarkable DAG, and I have no doubt that trend will continue in her new position. With her promotion to AG, there was an opening for the DAG position, and Mr. Manani Choko was appointed into that role. And we things have got off to a good start, and we certainly look forward to forging a good working relationship with him. In terms of committee governance, Chair, we obviously constituted, the Audit Committee is constituted in terms of Section 40 of the PAA and is accountable to the Auditor General and very clearly to yourselves as SCOAC. We have three formal meetings every year, and we have a training session every year. And in addition, in this past, we did have two special meetings to focus on ITC, internal controls in the IT environment. All the members attended all the meetings, including the special meetings. Again, all the members are independent of Auditor General South Africa, which is very important. And we affirm our independence at each meeting, and we sign a conflict of interest register as well. So from a governance point of view, if I could put it in colloquial terms, we dot the I's and cross the T's in terms of those requirements. The committee has a formal term of reference, and that feeds into a work plan that drives our activities during the year to make sure that everything that we meant to do does in fact get done. The key matters are for us to look at the system of internal control over financial reporting and hopefully reach the conclusion that is adequate and operating effectively, and we'll refer to that in due course. Equally, that risk management is adequate and effective, and then that the necessary resources and financial expertise is present in the organization. If I can move on, please, to the details of our activities. We a very key role is dealing with external audits and the evaluation of annual financial statements. Honourable members, you will be aware, of course, that while the Audit Committee is involved in the sourcing of independent assistants, external auditors. Your committee is the one that takes the final decision on the appointment. Crowe Johannesburg have been our auditors for the last few years, and we're satisfied with their work. We're satisfied they're independent, not conflicted in any way, and we do recommend to SCOAG that they be reappointed. The last year, Chair, there was some discussion about the fact that when they were first appointed, they from a transformation point of view, the BEE rating was the broad-based black economic impound rating was 7. That was back in 2018. We made it very clear to them with the backing of SCOAG that they needed to address that, and they improved their rating in 1 year from 7 to 4, and have been at 4 since 2019. The original target was for them to achieve level 3 during this year, during 2021. Unfortunately, they were not able to do that. However, they have just recently, in the last few days, been advised by the consulting firm that assists them get all the information prepared. The consultants believe that they will achieve the level 3 in the upcoming assessment, which will be done during 2022. So yes, they are a year behind their target.
Jefferson, can I just come in there, please? Can I disturb? Yes. I don't see the presentation on the
screen.
On the screen, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're not moving it. Okay.
Please, Adil, or who is handling the presentation?
Can you slide the presentation? That's right.
No, the previous page?
Okay. So, can you see it, Chair?
There we are. That page, thank you. So we're dealing with the first item being the reappointment of Crowe as auditors. We got the information from Crowe 2 days ago on the 10th of November, advising us that their consultants believe that when they are assessed next year, that their triple BEE rating will improve from level 4 contributor to level 3. And what we're saying is, while this is a year behind their original target, it really is a dramatic improvement from level 7 4 or 5 years ago to get to level 3 next year. We know from when we went to market to source the external auditors, the pool is indeed very small indeed, as all the large, medium and firms that have ratings, ones, twos, are already doing work for the Auditor General in terms of the CWC, the Contract Work Committee, and are therefore disqualified from being external auditors. Equally, the emerging black firms that we would love to consider for appointment are also doing work for AGSA. So it's a very small pool, and I think we're very fortunate that Crowe have really done everything that they can to get to level 4, and that it's predicted that they will get to level 3 next year. So against that background, we strongly recommend to SCOAG that they be reappointed. So, Chair, I would ask that be considered and that your committee would be prepared to confirm the reappointment. If we go into the detail of our activities on on page 8, which is currently on the screen. In the middle of the page, we say the committee considered the audit approach and audit risks in approving the external audit plan. We reviewed the annual financial statements, and that is in absolute detail. Every single word on that document is reviewed by all of the audit committee members. And we also review that the organization is a going concern, which in effect means that they have the financial resources to meet all their commitments within the next financial year. And AGSA team put up cash flow forecasts and various factors enabling the committee to conclude in agreement with them that the AGSA is a going concern. We obviously review the accounting policies, all accounting treatments, especially those including judgments. So for example, the expected credit loss is a major issue, particularly given the state of the finances in many of the local government authorities. And the financial statements have to be prepared in accordance with IFRS, which is the International Reporting Financial Reporting Standards, and of course the Public Audit Act. And all of those, we're happy with all of that. CROWS, the internal auditors, submit a management report to the Auditor General and to us. And they also, in that document, have to record if there were any unadjusted audit differences. Those are matters that they come across which they believe to be incorrect, or there could be a difference in judgment, but that were not accounted for in the financial statements. There were no unadjusted audit differences, which is a very positive factor. We review their audit report in the financials, or on the financials, but it's set out in the integrated annual report. So both their report on the AFS, the annual financial statements, and the report on the performance against predetermined audit objectives. We ensure that non-audit services are not material in relation to the audit fees, because if they're doing a lot of additional non-audit work, that could impact the independence, because in order to keep that extra work, they may, where they're gray areas, we need to make sure that they apply the appropriate level of professional skepticism and judgment. And we don't want non-audit fees to influence that in any way. They do a very little bit of work. The internal auditors would normally review the controls around the contract work committee, but they are conflicted as they do work for the Auditor General. So we specifically ask the external auditors to do that work that they would normally not do. They would audit the numbers that arise. They would audit the expense paid to the contract work committee firm, but they wouldn't necessarily look at the controls. So they do that. They also assist in terms of checking the calculations on the balance scorecard, because it's important that be checked by an external party as it impacts the bonuses paid to staff members. And we concluded the fees they get for that additional work is absolutely immaterial compared to the total fee they earn. I mentioned earlier that we always meet with them, the external auditors, without management present, to ensure the quality, credibility, effectiveness of the external audit process that's maintained at all times. And we particularly ask them if any pressure was put on them to suppress findings, or whether anybody in AGSA tried to restrict their scope of work in any way or manner. That is absolutely critical for us to be aware of that. And they replied that there is always healthy debate about about audit findings, but there was absolutely no pressure put on them to suppress findings in any way. We also review the integrity of information in the integrated annual report, and that ensuring it presents the economic, social, and environmental performance of the AGSA. That is a very large document, and we work our way through that to satisfy ourselves that there is no contradiction. The individual in the in AGSA that is responsible for that for the integrated annual report is in on this meeting, and she could certainly assure you that the audit committee do go through it and do give our input and any recommended improvements. I would describe it as a very fine document that is presented to you, Chair. I have extensive experience on audit committees, have had for over 30 years, and this integrated annual report is really of a very high quality. External auditors do provide assurance on the report, and that is included in the integrated annual report. It is limited assurance. They're not doing a review of all performance measures. They do report on selected measures, and their report is set out. I think it is on page 116 to 118, if members want to review it. The audit report and the financial statements is in pages 112 to 115 of the integrated annual report. Moving on to page 10. Once we've been through the process of doing all those measures that I've just described, we lead up to a conclusion that we are happy with the annual financial statements and integrated annual report, and we then recommend to the DAG that he, as the accounting officer, signs the annual financial statements, and then the AG herself, we recommend to her that she sign the integrated annual report that is presented to you. It would be fair to say that the financial results for the year ended 31 March 2021 were not what were planned for. There are very, very few companies or organizations that were not severely impacted by COVID, and AGSA was not spared in this regard. Particularly during lockdown, they were not able to attend at the auditee's premises, and that counted very heavily on them, the audit fees that were not incurred. But they took very, very positive and bold steps. They set up a central nerve center that monitored how they were going to set about doing their work. They were able to manage to do a lot of the work remotely with staff members working from home. And it was also very positive that they made a very strong effort for collection of debt. And that helped ensure that they have the sufficient reserves looking forward. I will discuss that a bit later. They're not at the level that they would like to be at, but given the impact of COVID, I think they have really done very, very well. We move on to internal audit. And Gabani are the internal auditors of the AGSA. The internal audit is appointed by the audit committee, that is within our mandate, and they operate on a 3-year rolling plan basis, so that every area or key finance functions within the organization must be reviewed by them through internal audit processes at least once during the 3-year cycle. I emphasize, just to avoid any confusion, Ngubane do work on behalf of the external auditors. That does not disqualify them from doing internal audits.
I'm sorry to be nervous. I don't know if it's only me who don't see the presentation, but we've been stuck at external audit, and I don't have a document here to refer to. So I feel...
I beg your pardon. Okay, Adil, you've moved it forward. So we're on page 11, which is now up on the screen. And I'm talking about Ngubane as the internal auditors. Is that in order?
Yes, it's in order, because I want to follow the discussion. So if you don't see anything that is very difficult and doesn't give you an opportunity or empower you to be able to participate fully in the meeting. Thanks.
Yes. Apologies for that. I will, as I turn over to the next page on the hard copy I have in front of me, Adil, I will ask you to switch to the next slide. I was just emphasizing that Ngubane are not independent, as they do work, CWC work on behalf of AGSA. However, internal audits are not required to be independent. As everybody who's been on this call would no doubt be aware, internal auditors are in many organizations staff members of the organization, and clearly would also not be truly independent. So that's not an issue, but I'd just like to emphasize it. The committee reviews the internal audit plan and makes sure that it's in line with the internal audit charter and that it is appropriate, that the scope of the work done is appropriate to enable the internal auditors to reach, to provide an annual written assessment to us, concluding on the internal controls. This year, they concluded that internal controls in the areas that they tested are satisfactory, which means that they are adequate and effective, and that is a key outcome of the audit. They did, however, highlight that while the manual processes are both adequate and effective, the controls around information technology processes do need improvement, and that while they may be adequate, as you can read in the last sentence on the slide, they can only be assessed as partially effective. We'll discuss that in a bit more detail going forward. On page 12, Adil, the committee responded to this and asked the AGSA.
I just want to confirm you can see slide 12, right? Because
yes.
I have moved.
Okay. Okay. Can we just the whole member see? Are you able to see page 12 that is on the screen now? Or could I say,
yes,
is anybody not
see,
able to see page
12? Yes, we can see.
Good. Thank you very much. So, following on the feedback from internal audit, we asked AGSA to relook at strategic plans in the IT environment, and we called for a special meeting on the 15th of June. And the corporate executive responsible for IT did a presentation referring to the specialist skills required. And there have, over the last few years, been vacancies in key roles and on the progress made in that respect, and where there are resource constraints, how they're dealing with those. And an obvious way is to contract in people to address those areas. For example, disaster recovery plans, setting up as a very specialist area, but you don't necessarily need to have somebody on a permanent basis, because once you've got that set up, as long as it's tested from time to time, the person would sit without anything else to do at certain times of the year. So they do contract people in. They did present to us that the target completion date to address all aspects of the plan is March 2023. We were initially alarmed by that. It's a year and a half away, and we would certainly hope that they will do everything in their efforts to address the outstanding areas that have been identified by external audit by internal auditors in that respect. At this point in time, there were a number of items that internal audit reported, I think about 30 of them, and they break those down into critical risk, high risk, medium risk, low risk. And AGSA focused particularly on the 12 critical risk findings. And it is that area where they made the best progress because of that being such a key focus. They have resolved 9 of the 12 critical risk findings and are working on the unresolved findings. The nature of the unresolved findings are where there are unsupported Windows operating systems, for example, on one of the servers, the software is 2008, and Microsoft stopped supporting that particular software in June 2016. So one could say, well, shouldn't they just have upgraded to new software? The difficulty is when you're relooking your IT environment, you need to make sure that everything is coordinated. So you can do quick plugs and fixes to get an item off recommendation for improvement from internal auditors, but it may not be speaking to the rest of the system. So you're addressing the shortcoming, but you're not ending up with a holistic system that's going to speak well to itself, if I could put it that way. But that was most gratifying, and we had a further meeting on the 4th of October just to confirm that progress is being made. Similarly with the external auditors, we met separately with internal auditors without management present and reached the same conclusions. I'm not going to take you through the detail of it because it's very much the same as what it was with the external auditors. So the overall conclusion then on page 13 was that overall the control environment in place is adequate and is operating effectively. However, we must recommend that there is room for improvement in controls around IT, as I have referred to above. If we move on to page 14, onto risk management, the risk and ethics business unit, by its very name, is targeted for focusing on risk management within the organization. Again, I want to say that with the experience that I refer to that I have, this risk and ethics business unit is a very, very effective business unit. It was headed up by Tsevetana, whose surname I never remember. Tsevetana is now heading up the transformation and strategy business unit, but she got this risk unit off to a very good start. And Tumi has taken over as the leader and continues to be at the cutting edge of risk management based on my experience with other organizations, including listed companies on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So a very good risk management team based.
Can you round up your time? Your time is at risk.
Okay.
Then
I'm not going to go into further detail on the risk management side. If you are happy with that overall report there, but no organization, no departments fought this, but they scored over 80% in a review of their work done by internal audit, and that is with certain items that they didn't achieve against the risk appetite statement. And I'll just give you one example. There's a target not to have staff vacancies of over 10%. The actual vacancy was 11.12% at the time the internal audit was done. But given the COVID situation, there was a recruitment moratorium in place. So there's a reason why that was highlighted, and it was that nature of item. So the shortfalls are, or the shortcomings that are identified are being addressed. Assessment of the finance function chairs, the last key item. We believe that the skill set within the finance department is up top draw. And the expertise of the CFO has been well recognized over the last few years. She has recently been moved ahead into a new role as national leader of audit. And we wish her well in that role. I just want to highlight, as noted on slide 16, that she recently received the Public Sector CFO of the Year Award from the African Women Chartered Accountants. And that really is the proof of the pudding that she is an outstanding individual and really served AGSA very well in the finance function. We did identify, as on page 17, the key focus area. Over the last few years, much focus has been spent on the accounts receivables, especially in local government, and that remains a very important area. And please, Chair, does need the ongoing support of your committee. However, given the findings in the IT control environment, that is now a key focus. Because cyber attacks are one reads about them in newspaper virtually every day. So that is a key area, and I can assure you the audit committee will continue to focus on that. I have in effect concluded already a bit earlier. So the slide on page 18, it just repeats that adequate and effective applies to the controls and risk management with room for improvement in the IT environment. And lastly, the committee is satisfied that we have adequately discharged our responsibilities as set out in our terms of reference, and that we have done what is expected of us in terms of the King Code of Corporate Governance. So I am available for questions, which I'm sure you and your committee members might wish to have posed to me.
Well, thank you very much, the Chair, Mr. Desmond Simons, on the report of the Audit Committee. I think as a committee, we well appreciate the detail which you have given on such work, which is indicative of the scale of competency of the committee itself, the areas that you raise, which we need to look into, one, the appointment of external auditors, and then the areas of a concern that relates to the areas of debt, which of course advances some reasoning as to how that has been incurred, and the questions that relate to risk appetite, which relates to the international problematic area in as far as cyber attacks are concerned. We've experienced that in the country, in various departments and entities. So it's really something that is a bit worrisome in terms of the risk level of appetite of the institution. And one area which I think the Office of the AG needs to attend to is the percentage in terms of their own undertaking of the levels of vacancies. Colleagues, do you have any questions for the chair of the audit committee while he's still around? But thank you very much, chair.
You're welcome, chair.
Yes. Are there any hands? Are there any hands for members of the committee for questions of clarity? One hand. Honorable Constance Supersongo, and welcome to you, honorable member. We hope that you are well. Platform is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate your welcome, welcome from your side. I just wanted to say that this report is quite clear, and you've summarized all the issues which need to be looked at. So I would say that let us move into the Auditor General's report, and then maybe some of the questions which I would want to raise would be after the presentation of the Auditor General. But otherwise, I'm happy with the presentation. Though we had an issue of the document, I'm sure it would have been even more effective for us to participate if we had the document before. So thank you very much.
Chair?
Well, that's it. Is there any further comment?
Chair?
Okay.
Yes, I'll cover it in here. I just want to confirm, Chair, that we have provided the presentation beforehand. That's why, for example, in the slide, you didn't see the aspect that the Chair covered with regard to the latest information we received on the 10th of November. And we had not replaced it with a new slide because we had already provided the presentation before it comes. So I just want to put that on the record, Chair, because, I picked up that members were disempowered by not having a copy. Thanks, Chair.
Who's that?
That is Adil Kamedin, Chair.
Oh, okay. No, fine. I think let's take note of that fact. I agree with the honourable member that indeed the report is detailed, quite clear. The areas which I was a bit concerned with are the areas which on the last slides, the chair has raised mainly on the IT in relation with the spectre of the cyber-related attacks, and the area of getting deeper into reserves is something which we have to deal with the Office of the Auditor General. Indeed, I think let's appreciate from the chair what he has raised for our own attention. We're going to revert back to them on the matter that relates to the appointment of the external auditors. But let us congratulate the CFO for the recognition that she has received based on the award, which is indicative of how the Office of the Auditor General is currently so skilled in terms of the critical areas of its own existence. And I'm sure the chair has raised the matters of the software, which are other worrisome areas which he has raised in terms of many windows opening and so forth, which ought to be looked into by those who work on the IT space. We must strengthen that within the light of the movement of the office, in as far as applying its own skillful audits and upkeep of the records and the documents into the acceptable levels. The last comment from you, Chair, if you have any. Mr.
No, Chair, I'm not sure if you can hear me. I've got a message on my screen saying that my connection is faulty. Chair, the perhaps one thing that I could have mentioned, the Auditor General of South Africa sets a target to have 3 months reserved. In other words, if the auditees stop paying for 3 months, they would still be able to carry on for that 3 months. That the actual score, largely impacted by COVID, is down to 1.8 months. So and that's the weakest they've been. So I did say they are going to require support from SCOAC, particularly in the area of debt collection. I didn't actually put the specifics, but if things, if debtors do not pay, their financial status would deteriorate over time. Just to reinforce that.
Point taken. Chair, thank you very much. Express our appreciation to your committee, and at this stage we welcome the Deputy Auditor General, who attends for the first time at this meeting with the AG. AG, can I give over to you and your team, or the DAG?
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to you and to the Honourable Members of SCOAC.
If I can just interrupt. Chair, thank you very much. As advised, I need to drop off the call to attend another meeting. But thank you to you and your committee and to the AGSA for their assistance in helping me put together the presentation. Goodbye, Honourable Members, and back to you, AG, and I apologize for interrupting you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll start again. I wanted to just greet the honorable members of SCOAG and to thank you for the opportunity for my team and I to share with you the performance report of the institution for the year ended March 2021. Certainly, we look forward to the engagement. Much of the aspects around the viability and how we run the institution, I accept that the chair of the audit committee has already dealt with, so I won't go into too much detail. I'll focus on matters that haven't been spoken about up until now. Honourable Chair, the 2021 financial year started on the 1st of April 2020, so in the middle of those deep, dark days of lockdown. And it ended in March 2021, which was still in lockdown, but not as deep and intense as when we started. We contended with COVID. We contended with the pressure of the real-time audits. We contended with the pressure of having to work differently, work remotely. Towards the end of last calendar year, in fact, a year yesterday, we lost our AG Magwetu as we were preparing to send him off at the end of his term. And we also had to deal with the leadership changes that came about with me taking on a different role and having to appoint different people to different roles. So it's been a year of significant challenge and significant change over the past 12 months. In spite of all of that, we've performed well. Our institution has demonstrated impressive resilience, unyielding focus, and demonstrated the institutional strength that sits within us. Team AGSA is made up of people who are patriots, who serve with unyielding dedication and professionalism. In the past 12 months, we have tabled 4 reports already, and we are working on a 5th one to be tabled very shortly. So I know that you don't always see them, but without the dedication of the 3,700 people that I have the privilege of working with, it would not be possible for us to fulfill our mandate. So I am absolutely privileged to lead this team and proud to share the performance of the work done by this collective. As you know, we have been working on the basis of the 4V strategy up until now, which is set out as on the basis of the Vision 2024, which AG Makwetu conceived back in 2014, and we implemented from 2015. So 7 years of implementing the 4V strategy is really the culmination of the work I will talk about now. Our vision, our mission, and reputation promise have remained consistent, which are really for us to be experienced as a relevant side that audits and reports in a manner that supports our constitutional democracy by enhancing accountability, transparency, and good governance. I see I have tricked my colleagues that's moving the slide for me. We can now go to the to slide number 5. Oh, number 4, sorry, the one on accountability report. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. You can stay there for a moment. Chair, I will talk through the accountability report on how we've implemented the new power, not in too much detail, because I'm aware that we have another opportunity to delve into specific MIs and what the status of it are. But I think as part of our accountability report, we are required to share with you where we are in the journey of implementing these new powers. After that section, I'll then deal with the specific Vs in turn, starting with value add, and then I'll go to visibility, and then we'll deal with viability. So just to signpost how we will go about this particular presentation. On the MI process, which is now the next, thank you. We are in the second year of implementing these new powers, Chair.
Yeah, I wanted to check with you, how much time do you need to do all that?
I can do this in 20 minutes. Is that okay?
No, it's okay.
Is that okay? Okay.
All right. Okay, yeah.
Okay, thank you. We expanded the MI definition so as to include all aspects. We talked about non-compliance, contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or breach of fiduciary duty. And then we still focused on the material financial loss. So we expanded a bit from the previous year, because you might recall part of our phasing was to start with a component of the definition and also a component of the audit phase. We implemented our enhanced powers at a total of 146 audities, being 89 for PFMA and 57 for MFMA. And we selected these on the basis of their portion of the government's expenditure budget, their history or track record of irregular expenditure. We looked at the key contributors to government priorities from a service delivery point of view, but we also looked at making sure that we had a fair spread across our own audit business units, which is how we are organized. And what we've done is also consider the outcomes of the previous year's MI. So we implemented and looked for new MIs and dealt with those, but we also, as we are required to do in law, follow up on the MIs from the previous year where we implemented. High level in terms of the type of MIs we're looking at. So we found a total of 171 MIs, 75 from PFMA and 96 in the context of MFMA. We've calculated a financial loss of 8.9 billion rand combined, but that's where we can quantify it. in a great many instances, we are unable to calculate the extent of the financial loss. What I would like to leave the committee with now are three messages on this aspect. The first one is that these AMIs tend to come up in the area of procurement and the area of expenditure management. So it doesn't matter which cycle we look at, we tend to find AMIs in similar areas. And what we also want to highlight is that the same messages that we keep giving, the same recommendations we keep raising when we do the audits, when we do the real-time audits, when we do the MI processes, the same message is about accounting officers needing to attend to preventative controls, to strengthening their internal control environment. Those messages remain valid. The same message is about the need for internal audit committees to play their role in supporting accounting officers to do what's required. Same message is about the oversight of the executive authority, supervision and monitoring as well, and also the role of the legislature. Because our view is that we all of us in the accountability ecosystem, including the Office of the AG, but all of us that have a role to play in driving accountability in the public sector, ought to be motivated and inspired to actually fulfill our roles with much greater diligence, because that's how we're going to be able to deal with MIs, but importantly, how we're going to be able to deal with strengthening the systems of accountability. So I will leave it there and look forward to our much more substantive feedback session on the specific MI. On the value add part of our audit work, you may recall that as part of the 4V strategy, the first V was always about value add. And here we look at all of the aspects of our audit work, the regularity work, as well as the real-time work. In the PFMA cycle, we audit provincial and national governments, and we include in there the SOEs, which audit results have been part of the parliamentary program this past week. We also look at MFMA and then the real-time audits, which were a new creation in this particular financial year. What we're finding is that when we look at even at 2021 and having conducted a total of 1,065 audits, so it's a total of 1,065 audit reports that we sign on year on year, split between those two big cycles, PFMA and MFMA. We often report on the bigger audits. So if we say PFMA, we're reporting on 4427, as we've done for 2019-2020, or the 257 municipalities. What sometimes gets lost in the detail is that the Office of the AG audits other smaller entities that we may not report on for the general report. But the machinery, the factory that is the Office of the AG, signs off a good over 1,000 audits every single year. What we're seeing when we audit and we issue outcomes are a couple of key messages, which I'm sure are known to yourself. What we're finding is that we're seeing some small improvements over time in the PFMA cycle. However, the key controls, the preventative controls that need to be in place are not there. There still tends to be an over-reliance on quick fixes. Some of these quick fixes are about, yes, getting consultants to help with compiling financials, or dealing with a particular audit finding and not dealing with the substantive issues that would have created an opportunity for that audit finding to arise. We're also finding that far too often, the whole system of internal controls is just not strong enough. The key inputs are not functioning as what they should. And if they do, that's when you're going to drive progressive and sustainable change. So our messages have always been about saying, yes, it's one thing to celebrate a few new clean audits, but the key thing we've got to deal with is make sure that we are shifting the entire audit base towards better outcomes and more sustainable outcomes. In the MFMA cycle, what we're seeing is that the improvements are simply not there, and the coverage that has been put on our messages has been quite significant over the last few weeks. The one thing I would also want to highlight around our audit cycle is that the 2020 financial year was particularly difficult. So we had the lockdown, we had the pressures of the real-time audit, and we also had to also contend with working remotely and making sure that our teams can stay safe and the teams on the other side of the preparers also stayed safe. So as a consequence of it, we struggled quite significantly with meeting our legislative timeframes. We are slowly moving the machinery back into the right space and getting our teams to catch up and make sure that we don't have these high numbers of uncompleted audits and that we don't compromise the accountability processes in the legislature. And then on the next slide, we highlight that we've got the journey on the takeovers of the bigger audits, the complex audits, the state-owned entities. Out of the 21 Schedule 2 entities, we currently audit a total of 15. Transnet was the new one that we signed off for the very first time this year. It was an incredibly difficult audit. And I suppose we benefited somewhat from the two-year transition that we had whilst we were working with the appointed auditors. But this year, when we were now having to sign it off and having to take the front of this audit, it was pretty tough. It was tough on us, it was tough on the management team, and I think we've all learned a great deal, which should set us up for greater success in the period that comes. One of the key matters that was publicized over the last few weeks was about the disputes that arose around some of the disclosures, which were ultimately sorted out towards the end of the audit process. So I think the journey around taking on these audits have gone pretty well. Eskom is probably of the larger audits that are still not audited by us. They've recently appointed a private sector firm to take over that audit, and they've done so with our support. In terms of audit quality, honorable members, over the last few years, we've had a number of conversations with you about the pressures we were facing in our audit quality management processes and the outcomes of our quality control monitoring assessments, which were not hitting the high targets that we have set for ourselves. We were quite clear we would not lower the bar. We would continue to strive for that high target of being at least 80% of the files that are reviewed meeting the very stringent quality control targets. What we did was we sorted out a number of things about how to improve quality in the environment. And we shared with you in our last interaction our plans for dealing with audit quality. I'm particularly pleased today to share that we've improved quality from the low of 72% in 1890, with a slight uptick in 1920, we've now landed at 2021 that has an 81% achievement rate. So we've actually met our target for this year. With that, we're not complacent. We will continue to strengthen our systems of audit quality management so that we can continue on the upward trend, but also stabilize at the right level. It's quite important for us to continue to work on strengthening the systems internally that support the generation of quality audits, audits that meet our own very high standards, because it's one of those very central aspects of us maintaining our reputation and upholding the credibility of the work that the office generates. So I'm quite proud of the teams, and we will continue to work on that so that we stabilize at the right level, as I've said. We've innovated somewhat in terms of how we deliver audits so that we can drive greater efficiency, greater coverage. One of the most exciting aspects of what we've innovated was using more and more of our multidisciplinary teams as we audit so that we get the full benefit of the diversity of the experts that we have in-house. So we're using much more of the forensics and data analysis aspect in our work. We're also using the performance auditors as part of our audit so that our audit messages are even richer and we can start to draw a more direct line between the audit message and the experience of citizens on the ground, so that people can connect the audit messages from the office with what's happening in reality. And we're starting to see that come through to the fore in a much, much more convincing way. I'll move on to the next slide, Chair, just to talk a little bit about these real-time audits. I think we briefed you as GOAC on these real-time audits when we did the second report. I know we spent a great deal of time with yourselves talking about the work that we've done. So I'll make three points only. The first one is we really did make a significant contribution into how government operates, because we were able to provide real-time input so that there could be real-time corrections by those that responded and real-time oversight by the legislatures. One of the things we're particularly proud of insofar as the real-time corrections are concerned are, for example, at the URF, where because we were able to do this work quickly at the very early stages of that TERS scheme being in place, the responsiveness of the minister and the leadership in that institution allowed them to make the necessary controls adjustments so that very quickly a couple of things happened. There was recovery of payments that were being made over and above what should have been made. So overpayments, embedded claims that had been made payments against, though that money came back. So over 2 billion rand came back into the coffers of the URF as a direct outcome of the work that the Office of the AG did. Another impact was that on the subsequent transactions, the invalid payments diminished, so that there were payments only to people who should have been paid. And the invalid rejections were also reduced so that the people who should have benefited indeed benefited. So what that does is that the effectiveness of that initiative improved, the integrity of that institution also improved. And the other thing which we are particularly proud of as a contribution is that where there was wrongdoing, where there were fraudulent claims, they could be pursued very quickly, and we were able to see people in the dock, and we were able to start seeing recoveries around these fraudulent claims. That is one of those ways where we can start to shift the culture of compliance into the institutions of state. So as an audit office, we remain extremely proud of the work that we did in these real-time audits. It took a lot of work out of the office. It challenged us, but we had the benefit of some of the capacity we had invested in over time, and we also had the benefit of support in terms of the people that lead these institutions. So if there's one thing we've learned, it is that the real-time audits can have a significant impact, and ours is to then get the accounting officers and the executive authorities to stay on course in implementing the necessary improvements arising from our recommendations. The PPE audits were also similarly impactful. The audits at SASA were similarly impactful. And there are a number of other areas where there were these huge benefits. So as I say, we have shared much of this with you before, so I won't go into too much detail. On the visibility aspect, and Chair, I'll make sure that we leave enough room for questions so that if the honorable members would like to talk a little bit more about some of these aspects, we will have that time. On the visibility aspects, I think buoyed by much of the work relating to the real-time audits, we ended up spending a great deal more time with executive authorities, accounting authorities and accounting officers. We spent a lot of time with portfolio committees, with SCOPA as well, with cabinet and the coordinating ministries, APAC, portfolio committees, National Assembly, as well as the NTOP. So all of our constitutional stakeholders got the benefit of much greater levels of interaction with our office. And it was really for the PFMA, MFMA, and the real-time audits. And one of the benefits of also being able to work remotely and do these things virtually is that we can cover many more stakeholders in a very quick way. So from a visibility point of view, we've seen a lot of people, we've shared our messages broadly, and we've seen the impact of those interactions being in the actions that people take as a consequence of our recommendations. One of the products we are proud of in terms of this goal is us having published the preventative control guide, which is one of those instruments that we are using to assist the system, to support accounting officers, to support executive authorities, and also to support those that work within oversight with this guide that helps them channel their questions, shape their inquiry in a way that's going to get us towards more systematic changes over time. So that's one of the things we've done, and it builds on the status of records reviews that we've been continuing with, which is really part of our proactive approach to support accounting officers in keeping them on course as they aim to improve their internal controls environment and prepare for audit. And we'll continue to look for ways to support the system without putting too much of a burden on the office, but ways to support the system so that accounting officers, the people they supervise, as well as the executive authorities and those charged with oversight are equipped to do what's required. We also interacted with non-constitutional stakeholders, and those are people who are standard setters in the professional bodies. We also spent a great deal of time with academics, and it's a mutually beneficial set of interactions, because we learn and deepen our understanding of matters as they also get to understand our messages. We also similarly spent a great deal of time with civil society. Some of the civil society organizations we worked with in the context of the real-time audits, and some it's really just about making sure that they understand our messages and they are able to see how those messages can help to shape their work as well. On the international front, our presence has been maintained through our work through INTERSCI, where we chair the Capacity Building Committee of INTERSCI, which is really focused on championing the initiatives that are designed to support the development of SCIs that operate across the globe. And in this work, we are required to collaborate with a range of development partners. We continue to host and oversee the Secretariat of AFOSCI-E, which is serving the interests of the English-speaking African countries and their auditors general. And then we're also part of the AU audit. We have responsibilities that have been allocated to us as part of that board of external auditors of the AU. During the year, we were recognized by the World Bank in terms of our independence as a supreme audit institution. And this recognition we see as being particularly important at this time, because it helps all of us as South Africans value the office even more, because we're able to see the strength of having this level of independence as we compare with others across the globe. Because what is clear to all of us is that a strong and independent supreme audit institution is critical for strengthening governance, oversight, and accountability in government. The viability aspect, the financial part the chair has spoken about, I will say two things. One is that despite the many challenges, our office has done extremely well in this time. When we met with SCOAG last year to share our forecast of how we may end the year, I think we thought things might have been more bleak than what they turned out to be. So they turned out a little bit better than that. And credit to the teams of the Office of the AG. We were able to meet our revenue targets. We only missed it by 2%. We were able to generate a good gross profit line. We contained our overheads quite tightly, including not advancing a salary increase or a bonus in that year, and also controlling other overheads. And as a consequence of it, even the 293 million rand deficit was a good achievement for the year. In that deficit, what you would see are things that we've absorbed around the real-time audits, where we were not able to recover all of the fees associated with that work. Of the 145 million rand that we anticipated as revenue, we were only able to collect 67.9 million rand, so only 47%. 77 million was the shortfall, when we met with you last time, we indicated that we would be approaching the National Treasury to seek to recover the balance. Unfortunately, that request was not approved. So we've had to absorb that, and it's sitting in the deficit as you see it. Another pressure point is the debtors, which remain very difficult to collect. We finished the year at R1 billion of debtors. Much of it, 70% of it, sitting in the local government space. So you've got 700 million rand that local government auditees owed us at the end of the year. And 20%, 200 million rand, relating to the state-owned entities whose debts have been particularly difficult to collect, especially those that end up with financial health problems, the Donals, the SA Express, the SAA, and SAPO to some extent at the end of this past financial year. So this area is now one of the bigger threats to the office going forward. The local government aspect is one that we have spoken about before. The Section 23 amendment to the Public Audit Act, which allows the office to, instead of relying on the National Treasury's budget to top up the fees for the municipalities that are financially distressed, that adjustment to the amendment to Section 23 allows us to now get that money directly from the National Revenue Fund. The impact of it is that things have improved slightly. Whereas a year before, we would be getting, let's say, 45 million rand from the National Treasury on these fees that are outstanding for the financially distressed municipalities and other auditees. This year, we've got 70 million rand. So it's a slight improvement. The worrying issue here is that we had calculated 133 million rand that was due to the office. However, we're only able to collect 70 million rand. So the issues about the affordability of our fees, the availability of funds to pay our fees, those remain a real concern for the office. We've done extremely well to drive efficiency and will continue on that basis. We've done extremely well to push our guys to relook at how we are auditing some of the more distressed auditees. However, we do feel the pressure and we are being forced to absorb it in terms of our profitability as well as on the cash basis. So one of the impacts is this cash cover of 1.8 months that we had at the end of the financial year. Part of it is really this inability to collect debts that are due to the office. The professionalization journey in the office, but I know I'm out of time, Chair. The professionalization journey in the office continues at a very fast pace. We now boast 1,369 audit professionals. We have other professionals as well, but just the audit professionals in the office make up a good 37% of the staff of the office. We have 3,700 staff members, and a good 37% are fully qualified audit professionals. 1,200 of our staff, so that's the ones that are in part of the training scheme. So you've got another third of our staff, which are the trainees, people who are in the journey of qualifying as chartered accountants. But I think just in terms of the representation of the professionals, one of the things we are particularly proud of is the representation of African women in the profile of the number of professionals. What you'll see on the slide there is that we have 746 qualified chartered accountants that work full-time for the office. And of those, you've got 269 being African women, 25 being colored women, 28 being Indian women. So wonderful representation, whether you're looking at race or gender, in terms of the professionals in the office. And a similar profile, really, you would see if you look at the number of registered government auditors, the number of ACCAs, as well as the number of certified information systems auditors. So that journey has gone on pretty well. On the next slide, you'll see that the number of trainees at 1,250, those are the ones that are part of the SAICA accredited training program of the office. This training program has over time helped to qualify more than 1,200 individuals as chartered accountants. We're phenomenally proud of what that scheme is able to achieve. And what you'll see is that scheme benefits not only those that ultimately qualify as chartered accountants, but those that then also qualify as registered government auditors, as well as other professionals that go on to do phenomenal work elsewhere. So that's a scheme which continues to impress in terms of the ability to give opportunities to young people that join the audit office with huge ambitions and aspirations, for them to realize those aspirations and go on to do really exciting work elsewhere. We are starting, Chair, to come across them, these young people that qualify through our office when we go on audit, because now they work on the other side of the table. They are the CFOs, the internal auditors, the risk officers in many institutions in government. So the contribution that the office is making is one that should not be underestimated. I'll make only one point on the next slide, which is about the award we got as an institution. So the ability for the institution to attract talent is one of the things we have to continue to invest in. And what tells us we are winning is not just the ability to recruit, but also what these young people tell others about us. So the South African Graduate Employers Association recognized the AGSA as the top employer in the public sector for 2021. We're phenomenally proud of this achievement because it says a great deal about the brand of the institution, the attractiveness of our office, and also the ability for us to inspire young people to see the public sector as a viable destination for them to build their careers and achieve their life's aspirations. On the SAICA aspect, the only thing I'll say is that our scheme is now generating high numbers of people that are available to write the professional exams and ultimately qualify as chartered accountants. So there are two professional exams. One is called ITC, which is part one, and the other one is called APC, which is written towards the end of the training period. These bars will show you that if you look at the dark blue, in 2021, we presented 584 candidates to write the ITC and 381 candidates to write the APC. So these are the highest numbers we've ever achieved. The only thing we now have to work on, which is critical for us, is to get the pass rates right. We've seen a deterioration in the pass rate, especially for the APC, and we're working with other stakeholders in the profession to design the appropriate initiatives that are going to help get the pass rate up to back to the right levels. And once we do that, the contribution that this office will make to the profession and to the public sector, that will escalate in even more impressive terms. We've continued with technical training, and that's all in our reports, and as well as leadership training, that's also all in our reports. We've also continued to invest in tools for the office on the IT space, which the chair of the audit committee spoke about just now. The last thing I will talk about, Chair, which is slide number 30, which deals with the transformation contribution, because the chair has already dealt with the risk and ethics part. But I want to just talk to the committee and the honourable members and share one last message. Our contribution to transformation remains firm. In this year, we once again achieved a triple BE level of one, and it was no mean feat to achieve that in the middle of the difficulties we had to deal with. In terms of our enterprise and supplier development program, which targets smaller Black firms and allows them to enter the space in the audit profession, where they start off by actually doing work for us and we support them in building their businesses. We continue to make significant gains. We allow them to build their businesses, train other people, create jobs, and ultimately benefit from the work that the office dishes out. In terms of our outsourced work, we now are allocating 66% of our work to firms that are owned 51% by Black people. And also we are allocating 21% of our work to firms that are owned 30% by Black women. So the journey continues, but we are phenomenally proud of what we continue to achieve in the space of transforming the audit profession, giving opportunities to young professionals who have an entrepreneurial flair and want to start in their businesses. And over time, it remains our hope that this contribution will be sustained as these firms grow and do work for people other than the office of the AG. So Chair, I've taken up another 8 minutes beyond what I promised, but I hope that you'll forgive me. And thank you for your indulgence. I remain available for the dialogue. Thank you.
No, fine. No, thank you so much, AG, for that report. Indeed, some of the areas that we've dealt with, the chair of the audit committee has covered. But the matters that are really telling for your actual operational capacity going forward, and there are pleasing instances in terms of your a contribution to sustain the audit a function, even to spread it even beyond your own jurisdiction by allowing those up and coming new graduates and people with interest in the audit work to find space through your own contribution. What is key? Is your sustainability to what the chair has referred to earlier on in terms of your liquidity, though the going concern status has been confirmed. I think we need to affirm the fact that even ourselves, we need to work towards finding ways of assisting towards the matters that relate to debt. The areas which you have as well covered through the extension of contribution on the financial prudence relating to the real-time audit and as far as COVID allocation is concerned, I think it's well appreciated. As you have given that support to us from time to time. The MI scope is something which we're still going to report to so that we can be aware of the work which has been done around the materiality aspects in as far as the outcomes of the audit are concerned. So colleagues, that's the report of the Auditor General. If there are questions, comments, you are free to raise those issues. Are there any hands?
Mataba?
Where is your hand in Tregas? Honorable Matafa? You can speak. Honorable Constance Matafa, where are you?
Can you hear me, Chair?
I hear you now.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair. I was struggling a bit with my audio.
Okay, great.
Now, thank you, Chair, for the presentation. I highly appreciate it. I just have one question for the office of the AGSA, and the question is around the usage of private firms in the conducting of core audit work. And then my question is based on the amounts that the office had spent in the financial year 2019-2020. It shows a significant reduction in the financial year 2020-2021. So my question is to find out what could be the reason for the reduction of the core audit work as performed by private companies. Could it be a situation where a little work has been given to them, or is there an effort, a deliberate effort, which seeks to have more work done by the AGSA office itself as compared to outsourcing this particular core audit work to private firms? That is just the one question, but otherwise the presentation is very clear. The presentation is very clear and highly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Matasa. AG?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Matasa. We have a deliberate effort to drive efficiency within the office in the first instance. So whilst we know we can never do all the work ourselves, we try and maximize efficiency within our own office. And that's what leads to the reduction in what is ultimately handed out to the private firms. It's really about us organizing ourselves differently, making sure that we get the very best out of the teams that we have. I hope that answers the question.
Through you, Chair, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, AG. Honorable Sipastongwe, Constance.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to comment the office of the AG with the leader in the head, and to say that indeed this is the very impressive work done, and the impact of the visibility of the office, it also made the country to talk about. It also made Parliament to do, of course, to be even more vigorous on oversight visits with a focus on SOEs, and also the FIU using the findings of the Auditor General, which is also commendable. Although we want to see the outcome of those investigations, because that is what South Africans are looking at. Because to investigate is one thing, but to come out with results is also something which can give our people hope that something is done about the government. And also to know that the very same Auditor General has been appointed by the very government, which it seems to be being looked at in a bad light. So we appreciate the work which the AG's office is doing, and also represent South Africa on very high level. And at international forums, the World Bank has recognized you. That also gives us comfort as a country that we're indeed in good hands. I'm not saying that because it's a woman in the helm, but we want to commend you that you are in fitting right, fully so, in the boots which you came into when you came into that office. One question which I want to ask Chairperson is on the security aspect. Remember, we've been talking about the security of the office and even the staff. How far are the cases, or is there any report on that? And other than that, I would really, really, really want to commend the office on work well done. We are not saying they've done enough. We can even do better. But we also need to intervene as a committee, including involved, especially on the payment, the debt collection, to see how best can we assist or give support to the AG in the matter of the debt. There was one yesterday. I was in one committee, which their challenge was that, for example, we're talking about title deeds in the human settlement. That title deeds is it's a bit going slow in some areas, precisely because type disease is not only a responsibility of the human settlement alone. It's a multidisciplinary type of an approach which should be implemented. And that is lacking. You find that other departments are not playing their role in terms of like land and other departments. I'm not necessarily saying land is slow, but I'm saying other departments which are supposed to be able to give the final products that or people must be using their type of disease, which it's part of addressing the disadvantage of the past. So I just wanted to make a comment on the thank you, Chairperson.
I am AG to follow the commentary by the honourable member, which seeks to commend your work with a rider of a clarity. That you want to respond, AG?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, honourable Chairperson. Thank you very much for the compliment. On the security aspect, one of the benefits of working remotely has been that the number of instances where our staff has been threatened, that has diminished. However, we are not yet complacent. We continue to watch this area because sometimes it shows up not just as a threat to them physically, but sometimes just in terms of the nature of the intimidation that might come in the course of audit. There tends to be a fine line between debating an issue and making sure that as management, there's a robust conversation between the auditor and yourself, right? So that's one thing. But there's a fine line between that and then now seeking to intimidate the team. And that's one area that we are worrying more about now. So we're not seeing too much of a physical security threat, but we're starting to see more and more intimidation of our teams through inappropriate pressure. And the way we are dealing with it is twofold. One is to remind and educate accounting officers and CFOs about the value of an independent audit opinion and the importance of maintaining that credibility and independence of that work. That's the first part. And then the second part of our advocacy is about saying to accounting officer, remember that you have to earn good audit outcomes. You can't just pressurize the team around one audit finding. That the journey has got to be about building your institutional control so that the day you earn a clean audit, you can sustain it. The day you get good outcomes, you know that they're sustainable. The answer is not so much that the physical threats, but we're starting to see more and more intimidation. The debt collection, that remains an issue that we are worried about. We are working hard in terms of driving collections ourselves, but we know that there are significant pressures on budgets generally. So yes, whilst we may be more and more efficient as an office, we're going to have to start thinking about a different way of funding some of these audits that are becoming very difficult for us to collect from. So we right now what we're doing is talking more to the executive authorities responsible for those audits where collections are difficult, so that we can start to formulate a proper response on individual audits. And then the part about the title deeds, interestingly, we see it in different audits. And I think, Honorable Sepo Simo, you're quite right, that you'll see it when you're auditing, let's say, a national department, and then you'll see it in the local government space in terms of that phase, the different parts of the process. We'll have a look at that and see what level of recommendations we can start to generate that can help the system drive better efficiency in getting these title deeds done. Thank you.
AG, thanks AG and Honorable Kopane, Honorable Kopane and Honorable Lenzan, and then the last one will be Honorable Mente.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. Firstly, I would also want to join my colleagues to take this opportunity to congratulate the Office of the AG for the sterling job that they are doing, especially under the circumstances that we face with COVID-19. My question, Chair, is with relation to non-achievement of some of the targets. According to the AGs, they planned to achieve 80 to 90% implementation of 2021 ICT project to implement the ICT strategy. For 2021 financial year, it is only about 77% of ICT projects that were implemented towards achieving ICT strategy. Some of the reason for the non-achievement, it was said that it includes, amongst other things, the delay in finalization of ICT strategy, and even the retention of ICT employee that resulted in a high turnover of employee in IT infrastructure. Now, I just want to find out from the AG, can he provide us with the mitigation plan aiming to address this non-achievement, especially of this ICT going forward?
Thank you very much, Honorable AG.
Chair, before I finish, can I ask the last question? You know, there are many governments or departments who will always say that we've got a clean audit, we're happy. But when you go to the community or to the society, we talk about clean audits and whatever. People, they say, but we still have problems. It becomes so difficult sometimes to tell the issue that is a clean governance while there are other challenges. Or is it because maybe the society we still want to live in a perfect society? How do you sell that idea? Yeah.
Okay. AJ?
Thank you, Honorable Kopane. On the ICT aspect, one of the things that makes it difficult for us to achieve all that we set ourselves for in the area of ICT is the leadership, making sure we've got stable and capable leadership in that business unit. We've not had much luck in attracting and retaining the right strength of leadership in that business unit, because what that does is it allows that individual to attract the right talent, supervise and monitor the activity properly. And I think as the chair of the audit committee mentioned, we're trying different things to sort out that aspect. We've recently appointed at the Exco level a chief technology officer. And I think what that helps us to do is make sure that at the very center of the institution, because the Exco is the apex leadership of the institution, you've actually got somebody who's worried about ICT on a full-time basis and doesn't have any other responsibilities but to sort out matters around the operations of the ICT function as well as the strategy in terms of how we go forward. We believe that this is one of the most important things to do at the moment, and that can give us some stability of leadership there and allows us to shape the work of the people in that business unit appropriately. Because the ability to attract, supervise, monitor, and retain and continue to develop key talent in ICT rides on the leadership of that business unit. So that's one of the critical mitigations we've put in place. Another reason for not achieving those targets is also that we had to shift our attention towards responding to the need for us to work and audit remotely. So some of the strategic projects, when we shaped them, 18 months before, would not have talked to the pressures of having to pivot in the context of the pandemic and the lockdown and having to work remotely. So that took up a lot of attention from the teams that were meant to implement those strategic projects. So it's not an excuse, but I guess that's the context within which we were operating this past financial year. The question on the clean audit and service delivery. So I'll answer it and say there are two responses we need to keep giving. The first one is to make sure that people understand what a clean audit report is. It's an important tool to demonstrate the integrity of an institution, its commitment to accountability and transparency. Because when you have that clean report, you now can assess whether or not people have performed. For example, for us, we have a clean report. And Honorable Kopane, you were able to ask me now to say, but your report says you didn't achieve all of your ambitions and targets in the context of ICT. It doesn't mean our clean audit is invalid. What it does is that it allows you, as the honorable members of SCOAC who are charged with the responsibility of overseeing the work of the AG, you now have a credible report that can help you do this work properly and ask the right questions and assess performance because you have at least a credible report. So a clean audit doesn't say there's been performance. It says you can rely on the information given to you to assess performance. So for us, we've got to drive awareness and make sure people understand that and can use the clean audit outcome to drive the right conversations and the right actions towards institution building. Because you see now, you were able to say, you need to sort out your ICT. Tell us how you're going to mitigate this thing about ICT, and we can have that conversation. The other part of the response I'll give around clean audit vis-a-vis service delivery is that for us, the challenge is to make sure that our audits and our reports are shaped in a way that facilitates these conversations and help people see the link between what we've done and what we say on the one hand and service delivery on the other hand. So there's still some work we want to do to try and refine the way we audit and the way we message the outcomes of the audits. But principally, it's about making sure that the users of the reports that we have certified understand the purpose of that audit. It's quite interesting that often the ones that perform better as institutions in the first instance have clean audit reports because it demonstrates a commitment to accountability, to transparency, to integrity of that institution. And it's a platform on which one can then start to drive ongoing performance and delivery. So that's the answer, Honorable Kopane. Thank you.
Honorable Mlenzana.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, AG and your team. Good morning, colleagues. Chairperson, let me start by also joining my colleagues into throwing some accolation to the good work done by AGSA. And perhaps before I get into this, I think there are three questions that I have, Chair, but I will be short. But let me start by whilst appreciating advice, the AG. You may take it, AG, and see if it works. This question of the debt recovery. Why not develop a debt recovery plan? For your clients, particularly those who are not paying or are sluggish in terms of payment, wherein you can end up bulleting them into a robot kind of an arrangement, your green, amber, red, because look, non-payment of dues to AG is also part of a poor financial management because that particular client would have budgeted for such. Now, if then they're not paying, it means then there is a financial management problem. I'm throwing it, AG, for you to consider going forward. And then the second one, Chair, would be I would have loved, Chairperson, to see a situation where the AG has a way of, in her report, projecting it into some kind of a two-phased, you know, approach. Remember, Chairperson, we have now pushed successfully that National Treasury has some injection into the coffers of AGFA. If we could see the impact of such income and it be accounted for, and so that we are able to going forward go back to the National Treasury to say this particular chunk that is currently being injected into AGFA perhaps needs some addition and so on. Remember, we are going towards February with the National Treasury. Then the other one, Chair, it has been touched, this question of security, but I would put it the other way around. Just to check, AG, how far or how strong or how weak are your relations with the SAPS? Remember, we encouraged you and SAPS to have that glue and that kind of working together, particularly when you begin to pick up these some kind of threats and all. Remember that SAPS is broad. You could have some intelligence services assisting you from that space where you foresee or you sense that there is some kind of intimidation and what have you. Then the last one, even this one was touched, but I also put it the other way around, AG. On this question of assessing impact versus the audit outcomes. Because really, the reality is that as we have been out there interacting with communities, there are two things, AG. One is that a particular municipality, for instance, would have a clean audit, but as you correctly put, there is still a lot that has to be done in that particular space. That's one part. But then the second part would be something has been done, reported to have been done correctly and perfectly. But as you now go for sightseeing, you find that it's ridiculous. I'm lacking of a better word. It is something that you just cannot explain. Now, when you are comparing figures in terms of money with the actual work done, now, it now talks to an audit query, which is very clear. Now, are these entities, I'm generic, deliberately, Chairperson, able to whatever they have done, particularly when we are talking the infrastructure built programs or projects, aren't they supposed to be taking over such programs and projects into their asset register so that the AG, when auditing, can now move further for sightseeing? I'm not sure, AG, if you get me, perhaps even when as a person, you understand, you understand what I'm trying to ask. And if I'm not getting there, you will add on. Thanks, Chair Person.
AG?
Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Mlenza. Yes, I got where you were going with the point. Let me start there. So what I was saying about the two-phased answer that I gave to Honorable Kopani is that Nathi, when we audit, we are looking to see how we close the loop between these two stories about what's happening on the ground vis-a-vis what's sitting in the reports. And we are starting to move. So you might recall a few years ago, we started to say, to go and do this sightseeing that you're speaking of. And you may recall A.G. Makwetu talking about a sports ground, a sports facility in one of the municipalities in the Free State, and said we looked in the books, you could see expenditure in the books. So we tracked it. We then said, okay, what's this money for? And then they said it's for this facility. Then we went there to go and look at it. And what we found was a fence. And at that time, if I recall correctly, you know, there was a significant amount of money spent. I don't remember the number exactly. But we are starting to do more and more of that so that we get better at our auditing and our messaging. At the same time, though, making sure that we continue to help others understand, or the users of our reports understand the audit and how it fits into the story about accountability, because it's not going to close the full loop around service delivery. It can answer some of the questions, but it's not the entire story. So we are looking at those things. Our guys are even getting better at the sightseeing because they take engineers and quantity surveyors with them. So it's not just an auditor anymore. We've supplemented our teams with other experts, and they're able to guide our assessment of things around if a project is said to be at a particular phase. The eye of an accountant might not be able to assess whether that is valid, you know, by just by looking at the project. But a quantity surveyor can go and assess it and give us a report about whether or not what is sitting in the books correlates to what is sitting in the ground. So we are moving, we're getting there.
Well, AG, can you allow Honorable Mende to ask the question, because I'm getting into a predicament here. I might lose all of you in the few minutes, this indication. So Honorable Mende.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. One of my questions is partly covered, but I just want to be brief if the AG can help us here. I remember at some point we have raised some suggestions in terms of the debt that the people that get audited by AG are not paying back. And there was a suggestion, or rather a proposal, that said their audit fees should be within their allocation, and then direct from National Treasury, it must go to the AG. I want to check with the AG if ever they had worked on any kind of a draft proposal in terms of which at every sphere of government where they are auditing, how much each of those institutions will be costing, so that as the committee, we can also deal with the proposal to say, National Treasury, please, the allocation of audit fees should not go to municipalities or departments or provincial government. Rather, it goes straight to the Auditor General. The reason why I'm saying this is very important. We may sit and acknowledge the fact that they did not meet certain key performance areas. But if you remember very well, especially you, Chair, when we were undertaking the interviews with our Auditor General, she made mention of a very crucial matter of a high security where, in particular, women had to be escorted by police from areas where they were auditing, yet they were not at any stage to finalize those kinds of audits. So there are security threats that are attached to this thing. So imagine a situation where you cannot cover security aspect of auditing, because auditing is not only crunching numbers. You have to also provide high security for your people and for your auditors in order for you to reach the target, and in order for you to make sure that it's an environment that all South Africans, women and men, can find themselves. themselves comfortable in. Knowing very well now that with the high corruption rate and everything, no one wants to be audited. And thank you very much, Auditor General. South Africans' levels of consciousness are actually raised by the reports that Auditor General is presenting and disclosing the rot which is within our governments, that many people did not understand why we're saying corruption. And you made that very clear as to why there is corruption and who's doing corruption when. But with that said, it goes with the highest threat, because no one wants to be accountable for that. No one wants to be held accountable, and no one wants to be pointed a finger at, which is your job to point a finger. Now, I want to check with you. Did you work on something? A draft that will assist us as a committee to make that solid proposal to the National Treasury and to say this is the area that we need to improve on. And as Auditor General's committee, we need this to be done, because with everything else that you are doing, you cannot then succeed and do anything productive if ever the aspect of allocation is twisted. If there is a skewed allocation of budget to yourself, that is actually supposed to come to yourself, but lands somewhere else, and then you end up not getting it. Otherwise, we're going to end up with a situation where, like Eskom, where municipalities are owing Eskom, and then we have to be chasing after departments, which is their mandate to be paying you. On the second point, Auditor General, is the audits of municipalities and the private firms that are assisting you is very much similar to the first point. And we do not think the private firms should be part and parcel of you. We understand your explanation to that effect. However, there has to be a plan that you take over this fully, so that there is no wishy-washy and some suspicion of numbers being cooked somewhere. We know what we have seen with Abu KPMG and everything else. But I think it's high time in this sixth parliament that we change all of that and be the standing committee that has fought for the Auditor General, that will have all the power in the world to do their work properly. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much. The majority of matters which you have raised are matters which ought to get into our final report when we have discussion on the Auditor General's report, and give the AG that time frame for the development of that plan, coming up with a model to us to make that proposal to National Treasury. And the latter part, which deals with the element of involvement of the external auditors in some of the work which ought to be done by the AG. I appreciate that input. AG, finalize those areas in a minute.
Okay, in a minute, Chair. Security for staff is a matter that we have to continue to work on in terms of this office. As I indicated, we haven't seen an uptick on the physical threats. It might be a story about working remotely, but we are starting to worry about the intimidation. And much of it is also about advocating for those that operate within the public sector to regard the work of the office in a way that's consistent with the provisions of the Constitution. Sometimes this line is starting to get blurred, but we've also got some work to do to reestablish those things. On the funding, Honourable Mende, what we worked on was on the basis of the newly amended Section 23, which said that put to Treasury early on your assessment of what you expect to struggle to recover from the distressed municipalities, the ones that are sitting in the 1%, where you can charge them up to a point, but then there's an understanding that they can't afford the full extent of the audit. We put to Treasury a bill of 133 million rand. We got 70 million rand. the basis of that decision was, we were told, was about affordability. When we did the real-time audit, we said to Treasury, we've been able to recover the 68.69%. We've been able to recover 67.98 million rand, so call it 68 million rand that we were able to recover out of the 145. We were not able to recover 77 million rand. Can you top up? Because we were asked to do this work and we've done it and it's added value. We didn't get that money. Those are the facts. That's what's sitting in the books. And I think Honorable Mlenza, and I'm also answering part of your question. We will be coming to the committee to talk about our new strategy, to talk about our new blue book, which we've submitted to you as a draft, so that we can get your input and also get your advice on how we can run this area of funding for the office, as well as other matters around the use of private firms in a much more detailed way. So I do look forward to the discussion. I think it's going to be challenging for us as well as for yourselves, but I think it will be useful conversation that will allow us to shape how you can support the office going forward on these aspects and maybe others that we will jointly identify. So thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, AG, for the areas that you have attended to, and thanks to honorable members. It's clear that the task is onerous, and in dealing with the report, we have to come up with fine proposals, one, on the areas of intervention in terms of the debt-related costs, two, on the Treasury's role to ensure that the Office of the Auditor General is more empowered in terms of its own capacity, three, looking into the instances of even furthering the depth of independence of the office in conducting its work. Three, the areas that relate to matters of risk mitigation. And then five, the areas which relate to the operational capability in as far as the scale of its own appointments and the keeping its own functionaries committed to that office in a manner which is going to contribute to the high standard of work as the AG's office is doing. Thank you very much, AG, for the report. Indeed, it's very much hopeful that the country has an office of a higher standard in the AG's office, and thanks to the members for contribution, we'll convene to look into that report and make some recommendations on it. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Mende. Bye-bye, Mende. We are vuya.
Sagi.
Oh, on the overall of a bov.
Ah, Saki, Zuzani, better, Saki.
Ah, so seven the song.
Zuzani, better.
Hey, bye-bye.
Hey, thank you,
bye-bye. 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 Yeah, again, let me know what I am.
I'm going to